son.
I know. I'm a terrible Soongi hornist.
No, child. That hullabaloo going on with your feet. Is that a nervous disorder?
I was just dancing. You do dances here in the homeland, right?
Not really, no.
Dancing is not conducive to a proper learning environment. Young people must have rigid discipline and order.
But what about expressing yourself?
I know sometimes we're so moved by our love for our nation that we can't control our own bodies. If you must, you may march in place quietly next time the urge hits you.
Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a Queer Avatar The Last Airbender superfan podcast. My name is Sam Stanish. We are here to discuss the incredible Book 3, Episode 2, The Headband. And I could not do it without the stunt queen of Ba Sing Se Ballroom, Derek Reining.
Whoa, hey, yeah. Stay flaming, which definitely sounds like a homophobic thing you yell at someone, but what do I know? It was 100 years ago. We can't judge them by our modern standards.
Yeah, I mean, Hotman has to be some sort of gay slang. It has to be. We are the giggles and laughs and joyous, jubilant noises you're hearing come from not one but two guests today. First up, returning to the pod, we have a man with the twinkliest of toes that I've ever seen. Oh. Matt Gagan.
Greetings, my good Hotman. I've been waiting so long to be able to say that to you guys without it being a spoiler. Very excited to be here to talk about an underpraised episode, in my opinion.
Thank you for holding back. I'm excited to hear the praise. Honestly, watching it today, I was like, oh, this was okay. but before we get too far into discussing the episode, it takes two to tango and three to cha-cha, oh, yeah. But it takes four to do this podcast. Mm-hmm. Joining us is fellow podcaster Brendan Ruppel.
Flamio Hotman. Oh, yeah. Favorite catchphrase of the show.
It's a banger.
Yeah, it really hit us. It hit the ground running with Book 3. Like, we didn't even know it existed, and I feel like it is really elevated and just spread throughout the community.
Mm-hmm. Like a fire, one might say.
Oh yeah, yeah.
One might say. Yes, I'm very like you just said, they Season 3 really hits the ground running, and in my opinion, that doesn't stop. Very excited to be here to talk about an episode from my personal favorite season, Season 3 of this wonderful
show. I can agree with that sentiment.
Nice. So you're saying this season has a pair of hot feet, and they're just going to keep running.
Words out of my mouth.
Good. Yeah, it's funny that the Fire Nation apparently has like very fire-based like sayings, but we never heard Earth Kingdom people be like rock and roll or like.
Oh yeah, you would think so.
Water. There was a character named the Boulder. What do you mean?
I guess. One guy, though. People weren't calling each other "Hey Pebble" or like.
Well, also Aang's the only one really calling everyone Hotman.
Yeah,
you could say he might be like slightly racist, honestly.
Yeah, we have no idea what it could mean. Kuzan could have been like pulling the wool over his eyes. Like sometimes when I talk to British people about British Bake Off, sometimes they think it's funny to convince me that fake words are real words over there. And I have no choice but to believe them.
No, they're quite the pranksters.
They are.
I'm a serious rube and I will be duped by anything anybody tells me. So if someone who's from a place telling me that if that's a word over there, what am I gonna say? I don't believe you.
Listen, if you're gonna tell me something, I have no reason not to believe it. So that's
We're all rubes.
Yep. So I think we're about to get a call in from Scam Likely, I believe is his name.
Bring him in.
Yeah.
Why not
buy it? Yes. Oh man. So yeah, the headband, or the headband as one could stylize it. We love a Footloose reference. Why not? Let's have a Footloose episode.
You've got to have a Footloose episode.
Oh, yes.
I mean, they did have one, so they must have had to have had one, right?
Like, they had to.
Why did they do this?
They even thought about it from season one.
Yeah.
Had it on the right time.
It could have, maybe it started out like first draft was like a, let's say like a flash dance or a dirty dancing. And the studio notes was like, let's go a little Footloose. Why not?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Reeks. Mm-hmm.
with a Spartacus twist at the end of it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I was very impressed that they were able to get that together. Like, I don't know when they planned that, like just in case this party gets out now, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, clearly, I mean, maybe it's the indoctrination, but it seems like the Fire Nation kids are very ready and willing to become a hive mind.
That's true.
And a cult of personality, yes. speaking of which, we got noodle art of Fire Lord Ozai, which I love. I feel like more shows should have noodle art of their main villain in it.
Did you get that sent in from fans?
What?
Noodle art of Ozai?
No, the episode.
I know. That'd be great if they actually sent that in.
I mean, if anyone wants to make noodle art of me, I am essentially.
They should have. Yeah, Derek and Sam noodle art with Ozai in the middle, of course.
I would happily pose nude for some noodle art.
Not just your noodle, though.
Oh, my God. That's a good idea.
Or that included.
Wow, I don't even know where to go from there.
So
we could talk about what path it would be.
Matt, I sent you a list of book 3 episodes a while ago to peruse over and decide what episode you would want to be on. And you were like, well, I would love to do this episode of this episode. And you eventually landed on the headband. And I just wanted to hear your thinking and thought process behind why this episode of all of the open episodes you could have selected.
Yes. So for me, like you said, you gave me the list of open episodes. A lot of my absolute favorite ones were, you know, rightfully already taken. So I obviously didn't want to, you know, try to duel anyone to reclaim the episode for myself. So out of the ones that were open, you know, I narrowed a list down to 2, and then I, you know, consulted with my partner Brendan over here to see which one would be good for us. And now the reason that the headband made my short list as one of the final 2 episodes is because, like I said, it is one of my favorites in what is my favorite season, and it's one that, you know, when people are, you know, I look at the Discord sometimes. I see people tweeting about Avatar. No one's really talking about, oh my God, the headband, everyone loves it. You don't really see that. But for me, when I watched it, every other second I'm laughing. The whole running bit of Aang calling people Hotman gets me every time.
The parents, what a good bit.
That's what I'm saying. It has one of the funniest scenes in the show with Mr. and Mrs. Fire, Wang and Sapphire Fire. That truly cracked me up the first time I saw it. It's a great episode for our hero, Aang. You know, a lot of times our protagonist is really, you know, we don't really focus on him. You know, everyone, we're obsessed with Zuko, rightfully so, and other, you know, Toph is another one that's a lot of people's favorites. But this episode particularly, we get to see, you know, Aang goes to school within 2 days. He's the most popular kid at school. And you really get to see why he is our hero in the first place, what makes him a worthy protagonist of the show. You know, it shows it him in a great light, and just all the positive aspects of him in this episode. And I enjoyed spending time with him this episode. So that's another reason why I really love this one. And, you
well put.
Going to school, always a great time.
Always fun. Always a fun little distraction.
A high school show. I don't know what grade Aang's supposed to be in, so maybe it's not high school, maybe it's middle school. But, you know.
It could be middle school.
A beautiful rundown. Yeah, I think he's like 6th grade.
Still a great atmosphere for a show.
To your point, I'd say he's not like a favorite character by any means by the end of the second season, and this one for me, early season 3, kind of puts him up in maybe my top 5 characters. Before this episode, maybe not, but he becomes a lot more likable again after this episode.
Wow. It's interesting that he becomes so popular given that his actions directly cause everyone to have to take a pop quiz, which is not great. I feel like that's instant social pariah territory in any other show, but they're very forgiving over the Fire Nation.
Apparently. I just love the action. He's
able to win them over, I think.
He's so excited to go to school, you would think he would remind the teacher that she forgot to assign homework. I was interested in this episode watching it this time because we had just watched the last week's episode where he was so distraught over people not knowing he was alive, and also like dealing with his inability to be the Avatar anymore. People don't know he's alive, and all dealing with all that sort of stuff. Right. And in this episode, he's like thriving because he's anonymous and he's like able to enroll at the school because people think he's someone who he's not. And in doing that, he like breaks these kids away from like the, like Derek was saying, like the hive mind cult of personality, like praising the Fire Lord blindly, mm-hmm. that they like were grown in like a course of like 2 days. He's like changing society.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect of this episode, is that we, like, before this we had some inkling of like Fire Nation propaganda with I believe something we pointed out was like the puppet show way back in book one at the Fire Festival and the deserter, but it's like really in the forefront in this episode, this idea of like the Fire Nation claims the Air Nomads had an army, mm-hmm. like all this stuff. They even have a pledge of allegiance, like terrifying. Oh, yeah. Yeah, indoctrination. We don't, yeah, we definitely don't terrifying, have that in America.
While also very funny to hear Aang try to say it.
Right. I love that same one. Time.
Right. I feel like he made the wrong call there. Everyone was facing away from the teacher. Just don't say anything.
You say it, yeah. Like extra loud too.
Yeah, he was.
Overpowering everyone.
It was a little much from Aang. But as I feel like we know he's not great at improv. We've kind of clocked that before, but once again Katara is just instantly on board as Sapphire Fire. She's got her character right. down.
If that had been right. said to, like, because it felt like they had not talked about it ahead of time, and just like if I was, because he said his last name was Fire, but like I feel like if I was in that scene I wouldn't have picked it up and like would have said a different last name.
Right.
They did it so quickly. She's great so job. impressive.
Well, yeah, she, Aang may not be great at improv, but As we saw, Sokka and Katara are yeah. truly gifted character actors. They could
Sokka, a great sketch writer.
Yeah, yeah, great job in their scene.
And right. the needless detail to have Katara be pregnant. It's
amazing. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Delightful. The yeah, fact that she could pass for a mother too to Aang is also very funny.
Right, she's yeah. a whole of 2 years older than him. Right. Yeah, great job on their part. Love that for them. Sadly, this is a very Toph light episode.
Much say like she last week.
Yeah, we hate to see it, but you know, she puts like a, I think the only thing she really does in this episode is like put a little pin on like, gee, Aang, you did show them how right. to loosen their feet, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, which good for her. Although I do think a bit, like probably one of my favorite parts of this episode though is the Zuko like subplot that goes on here.
Oh,
I feel
very
like
important.
Obviously like you're gonna like focus on like the headband section of things because it's the episode title, it takes up a big chunk of it. But I feel like this is like a really interesting time to be tracking Zuko's emotional journey. And something I really noted in this episode is that he's very violent. I feel like usually we don't see Zuko like resort to violence so quickly. Like we see him pin a guard against the wall, we see him like destroy a, was it a stool, something, a squatty potty,
yeah,
perhaps
squatty potty, and, I think it was,
yes, like just fling it up and obliterate it. Like I don't think right. we've ever seen Zuko do that in a non-combat scenario. Like he's just very like acting
all-time low mentally.
For sure. And it's interesting, of course, that I feel like we've noted before that that's like the idea of violence being the only way for a person to communicate. That's like a very Ozai kind of trait, who literally used violence to try to teach Zuko a lesson. So it makes sense that now that Zuko's back here, he's kind of regressing in right. that sense.
Yeah, it feels a lot more like season one Zuko than like master of himself season two Zuko that we got to know for a couple right. episodes.
Right.
He's got Kylo Ren vibes in this episode for sure.
Very, very that, yes. And I also really like that Zuko, when he's talking to Iroh, is in a lot of ways like trying to convince himself of what he's done. Like Iroh doesn't speak at all in this episode, and he physically turns away from Zuko, which is something we've noted is a theme between these two, is the idea that they're very rarely like facing each other during these big confrontations with one another. And it like hits really hard in this episode, especially because we see Iroh cry and
the tear. Yeah.
It's
yeah. That really gets me.
It hurts. Yeah.
I was excited we were getting Iroh in this episode, and I didn't realize that he doesn't even speak at all.
No lines. Yeah.
Yeah, which, like we said before, Mako, the voice, the original voice actor of Iroh, passed away between books 2 and 3, I believe. And he does have a new voice actor. We have heard that voice actor before here and there, but we don't hear him here, which I believe was like a weird coincidence on the part of the story. But it, even then, like even not knowing that, it's still just like a, it's tough to, because Iroh is, his whole thing is he speaks wisdom to Zuko, right, like out loud. Like that's it. That's what Iroh does. And so to not even get that from him is painful. Clearly, and it's painful for Zuko and Iroh too.
Yeah, and why isn't Iroh choosing to speak to him exactly in these moments here?
I think he's just so ashamed of him and like feels that he's like betrayed. I mean, he's definitely betrayed Iroh, but I feel like he's betrayed himself and his like growth throughout book 2, and just like he doesn't know what to say probably.
Right. Just doing himself a disservice and doesn't know how to react to his regression.
Yeah, it's, I feel like there's a lot of different ways you could really like read into it. Like you could read it into it that way, or you could maybe read into it like in maybe a more positive way where Iroh is like thinking, well, I've tried the words. The words haven't worked with Zuko. So now maybe I just need to let Zuko figure it out for himself. And it could be both of those things. Maybe it's all of the above for Iroh.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know that Zuko's the bad guy here, but I feel like he really did just need something from his uncle there and wasn't getting anything. And he really just caused him to spiral out of control.
Right. And I mean, it resorted in Zuko talking to a mysterious man in shadow, whatever that means. We don't know right now.
They really know how to pick shady locations to meet up at, though. That looked like the exact place you would want to have that kind of conversation. Yeah. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Not a lot of screen time for that plot, but it packs a punch for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, I assume intentional on the part of the writers to have this like very goofy, fun A plot, and then the B plot be so heart-wrenching. I mean, I feel like that's every Aang Zuko story for the most part.
I mean, I think that's another reason why, like, this, I mean, the Zuko plot lines and like stories in the beginning of book 3 are interesting, because they have like a through line and they're not episodic like the gang characters or the gang plot lines mostly are. Like, I was thinking about it earlier today, and I don't really even understand why they're not traveling around with, like, the army. Like, I'm unclear, and I know we just watched it last week, but they were just like, we're not gonna go with them for some reason. And, but, like, I don't know why, and it's, like, doesn't logically track for me what is happening with their, what is the plan? What right. is their plan?
TV-wise, it's more fun to see just, like, the Avatar gang.
That has to be it, but it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, clearly they don't have a plan yet. They're just when it hits them, it hits them. You know, they don't want to rush things.
They're waiting for like a weird glowy Avatar sign.
Yeah,
and they're probably gonna get one.
Yeah, that it's already happened once, well, twice, kind of in the span of like a few seconds in last episode. Sure. Yeah, they're just flying by the seat of their very stylish red pants.
Oh, yes.
We love, love, love a costume change.
That's right.
Last season was the season of the short sleeves. And now we're getting just a full wardrobe change. I love that for all of them. And I love that it's like, we really have, like, we get these accessories. Like, yeah. It's a very, like, elongated sort of section where we're just redesigning these characters. It's great.
That was one of my big questions I wanted to ask. Who had the best outfit?
That's tough. I love the ingenuity of Toph's, like with the shoes. That's pretty genius. I don't know. I feel like I feel like Toph overall, she kind of nails it. Honestly, she finds these like equivalent pieces to her old outfit, even like this headband thing. Yeah, I feel like she's top two of the week for me.
Okay.
The fortunate thing is that they all look great. I love
I was gonna say they all look good in red. They're all rocking the red attire
well. Yeah. And you would think that it would at least be a little bit more bizarre to finally see Katara and Sokka in anything other than blue, but it just works.
It works, yeah. Aang looks cool until I saw the rest of the fucking nation was wearing the same thing.
Yeah, tough choice on Aang's part. Unfortunately, okay,
Aang must have been like so stressed all day with the headband on, because it seemed like every authority figure he was running into was probably going to be like, you can't wear that around your head. But he was just like, I have a scar and it's embarrassing. And thankfully that worked. But see, like
that was the improvidence part. That was the one time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine if that thing fell off.
That's the last thing he could have happened.
The end. Right. I don't. Good on that teacher for being understanding for just that one thing.
I get it. Scars have been there. Totally.
Yeah, she's even the evil teacher from like a Pink Floyd video. It has her limits in terms of cruelty towards children. She'll never make them show off an embarrassing scar.
Never.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, in that span, we seem to have lost one of our four elements. The world is out of balance now.
You brought him back, Derek.
When the world needed him most, he did not vanish. He reappeared.
Wait, Brendan, what element would you bend?
Easily air. I'm just a very passive person. I'm not a fighter. I would love to fly. It emulates myself the most. I think it's me.
Perfect.
I'm an air guy. What have you guys said? I only listened to a couple episodes. I don't know.
I'm water. Derek's earth. And last time Matt was on, he said he was air too.
Yes, I think I remember that. Yeah.
The last two airbenders, me and Brendan.
There they are. Yeah, the two of them. So I feel like Aang does a great job though of embodying his element in this episode. He even name checks the Iroh's prescribed sort of adjective for the air nomads, which is freedom. He even like says that like bringing freedom to the Fire Nation, which is a cool like way to think about like the elements aren't just like the physical things that these people are like bending. It's also these philosophies.
Their way of life.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love how goofy the airbenders are too. I identify a lot with like the freedom of character in general too.
Very fun loving.
Very fun loving.
I also like that Aang doesn't like hold a grudge against the Fire Nation in general and is like actively trying to help the town. Like I feel like a lot of protagonists, I guess mainly I'm thinking of Anakin Skywalker, but like I just feel like they would hold a grudge and like be against the Fire Nation in totality, but he's trying to instead help by like bringing the spirit of his people who they destroyed 100 years ago to like help these children have fun.
Right, like he remembers them a certain way and wants to kind of get it back to the way it was when he was alive the first time.
True.
Right. Yeah, and he's not really holding grudges. He's not holding grudges against the Fire Nation in general. He doesn't hold grudges against, like, he faces a few mean people in this episode. You know, the teacher is not the nicest to him. He just kind of laughs it off. He's got, you know, Anji's asshole boyfriend down his back the whole episode. I don't know what Anji sees in him, but, you know. But Aang just really, he's got a smile on his face the whole time. He's really just happy to be a kid. It's very
good to do.
Yeah, he's just, you know, nothing that anyone can say to him in there is going to, you know, it's going to put him in a bad mood, apparently.
For sure. I mean, I feel like that's like Aang's, like a lot of Aang's anxiety is like this idea of he was gone for 100 years. But I feel like that's to his strength in a lot of ways. And this episode really displays that in the sense that he has this empathy for this nation that for everyone else in the world, they are the bad guys. And that's what they've always been for like everyone has been alive for the last 100 years. That's just what the Fire Nation is. But to Aang, he knows that there's something else there, that they were always, they had dances with names and everything. Yeah. Like this isn't what the Fire Nation is supposed to be. And so it's like a nice sort of poetry that Aang like can only succeed in stopping this war because he was gone for 100 years and he doesn't remember he doesn't see the Fire Nation that way. He sees them as what he saw before, which is apparently great at dancing, very elaborate dances.
He like, what in the dance scene where like everyone's too afraid to dance and he's like showing them dances, that's a great thing to do, but it looked like they were really hard to do. Like the first thing he did is like get down on his hit, like I can't even describe what
you need to have some like Megan Thee Stallion like iron knees to handle that dance, I think. Like, goddamn.
Right. There's also that one scene where Katara is jealous and comes up to him, and he just whispers in her ear, and all of a sudden she knows how to dance like an expert. Like, whatever those words were.
I thought she was just being humble about her dancing and that she was actually like,
yeah,
a star.
Like, hey, babe, just do what you always do.
She was afraid to hurt her fetus.
Right. Yeah, I assume that was supposed to be like, oh, this is like a training exercise they've done before, because it seemed very like waterbendery.
Well, yeah, I get that.
But it's fun to imagine they just do this all the time as a dance.
Right, that could be.
There's probably some downtime, you know, when they're, you know, at night. You know, they can't be, you know, traveling around all the time. They're probably learning, teaching each other dances in the downtime.
I mean, that's what I would do.
That's what I currently do.
Right. That's what I'm always doing.
Yeah, you can imagine the gang in modern day, like at night, they're doing these TikTok challenges, dances. Yeah,
absolutely.
Clearly, sure. Aang could absolutely crush the Busset challenge because, like we said, his knees are just like flexible as hell. So,
some of Aang's dances should be TikTok challenges themselves.
Do you think in modern times, the Avatar's Instagram accounts would pass down from one Avatar to the next one?
Yeah, is it like a
crying, laughing, thinking about that?
Is it a POTUS situation?
I think so.
It's going to like an infant child, or who's running the Instagram account?
Run by Avatar's mommy, and then they link their account so they get followers. But I do like thinking about that. Like, I feel like this is very like Tumblr edit of me, but I do love thinking of like modern time protagonists, like in how they would be super famous because they're like saving the world and have like millions of Instagram followers. I think about that like all the time.
Like if this was like real life, these protagonists. Yeah.
Yeah, like if they had Instagram, like Katara would have like millions of followers, Aang would have millions of followers.
Yeah, especially Aang. Yeah.
If they do an, I guess, third spinoff, wouldn't it kind of be closer to current times?
I guess it depends on what they would want to do with it. I mean,
how long?
Based on this episode, I would think they would set it in an 80s world.
80s, yeah, maybe 80s. That's true.
Are you picking a reboot of this series where they like incorporate social media into it and stuff?
I think that might be what happens next.
Why the hell not? I hope it's 90s so we get some like GeoCities websites going on. Like, it could be a whole episode.
There we go.
They learn how to put it like a weird like angel gif on their web page. It's that could fill 22 minutes of an epic children's show, I think. Yes, obviously this is a Footloose episode. Are there any other 80s like movies that you think the show should cover? Is this like, have they not tapped fully into the idea of the 80s pastiche?
I think they should probably do a Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We can have an Aang's Day Off. Mm-hmm. See what's going on there.
This would have seemed like the perfect episode to have a Breakfast Club sort of situation, since they were in a school.
If they stayed in that town, they could definitely do that the following episode.
Right. Yeah, somehow the other three get enrolled and they get detention. It could happen. And somehow they all forget they know each other. I don't know. It doesn't quite track 100%, but you know, it could work. Let's see. So that's essentially like, I feel like, the meat of the episode. Is there anything else? I feel like a lot of the emotion of the episode really is in that Zuko-Iroh interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say I do love that Spartacus moment from the kids. Like, that's a great, just instant heartwarming. And I love that you can like track these sort of little bit characters who I don't even think have names.
Right.
Like the one who kind of looks like Aang, the one who's doing the windmill,
the quiet guy.
Yeah, I'm
the basket case.
I'm gonna miss them. I feel like Aang just made a bunch of new friends, and now he's probably never gonna see them again. It's kind of made me a little sad at the end of the episode. I think they should get their own spin-off series.
Especially that one guy that does the freestyle. Has that absolute freakout dance.
I love that. I've noticed in this, I feel like I've watched like a special before where they talk about doing like references for animation. And I believe Brian Konitzko, one of the co-creators, did in fact do that little freestyle dance as reference to the animators, if I remember correctly.
I do think that we should, this before moving on to some sort of other segment or anything, I do think we should discuss, like, I mean, this is a pretty Katang Katang episode. Like, they like are hinting at stuff, and like there's a kiss at the end, and they do the dance, and just like, Brendan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for coming to me on that. Well, me and Matthew here have spoken about this prior to this record. This is Katara's most attractive episode by far.
I don't remember talking.
We did at length, and that's okay to say because I grew up with Katara, and I watched the show through the eyes of Aang. With that said, I think there's a spinoff here with Aang and Angie. There's another timeline here where Aang goes with Angie, and the show ends differently.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was shipping them as well. She seems like a very nice girl. I think, as Brendan kind of flagged up earlier, you know, Katara is apparently old enough to pass as Aang's mom. Maybe they can be romantically involved. That's just how I feel. I think both of them, I think maybe Aang and Angie could have something going on, and Katara and, I don't know, maybe Zuko could have something going on.
Definitely more age appropriate.
Yeah, just throwing some things out there.
Yeah.
So not my favorite, but.
Right. I do think the gang is missing someone with a blunt bang going on. Like, what we're missing. Sure. May's got that covered for, like, the Fire Nation group, but we really need that over here on the good guy side.
Yeah. But yeah, it comes from pure jealousy, that whole scene with the two of them dancing.
But I don't think it does, because I thought that was what it was going to be, too, when I was watching the episode, because I didn't remember the exact sequence of events. But what actually happens is that, like, Aang and Andre are dancing, and then Aang approaches Katara to dance later. So, like, it's not like Katara got up and got angry and, like, to dance and, like, forced him to dance.
But they did show your face during
to dance with Katara.
Right. That's fair. He was thinking about her all the time and never had eyes for Angie.
I did love that, like, because Aang clearly is, like, not into Angie in any way at all. But I love that the bully kid is just, like, instantly on defense, and I don't think Angie ever confirms that she is his girlfriend, and she even rolls her eyes at him.
That's true.
I don't even know what's going on there.
You must be one of those popular kids I've heard about. That's right.
I am popular.
Who
confirms that? Who in the world says, yes, that's me, I am a popular kid?
Apparently that guy.
That's his whole thing.
Yeah, like there's a lot of fun lines in this one, and I didn't flag this up earlier when I was talking about why I love this episode, but when we go back to the Zuko storyline, one of my, you know, favorite romantic lines in this episode where he says that you're so beautiful when you hate the world, that really was beautiful to me. It's just another just another thing to love about this episode.
Yeah, every young emotional middle schooler watching that was like, I cannot wait.
Every scene kid.
For my 2D boyfriend to say that to me.
Because even though I love Zutara, like, Mei and Zuko are also really great. So, like, it's a win-win from that angle. Like,
and they're natural.
I'm always happy with who Zuko's with or shipped with. Because, like, their scene is so good, and I love the dynamic of Zuko dating his sister's friend, and, like, Azula coming into that scene is just so funny to me, where, like, and Mei is, like, so unafraid of Azula at this point, where, Azula is, like, making some stupid excuse about Ty Lee's braid, and Mei just, like, sounds serious. Yeah. And, like, I just think that I just love the Fire Nation group dynamics, and like, I wish that there had been a point that's like, and this is it, I guess, I don't know what I'm saying, but like, I just wish, I guess I wanted earlier to there have been a point where like we could have seen just the four of them traveling around for some, I don't know, some random excuse that they could make up, because I just think that group is really great, even though it's like obviously terrible for Zuko to be around his sister.
I wish that we got Ty Lee in this episode. That would have just made this a perfect episode. Yeah, it's really the only thing that
background.
And they were teasing us with a Ty Lee mention, too. And I very unfortunate.
She's a favorite of yours, correct?
Ah, yes, I love Kylie.
Yeah,
if she was in it more, she'd maybe even be my favorite. But she,
yeah, you know, she, I think enough. She's number two on my side characters, top five.
Ooh,
wow,
who's number
very
one?
Intensive listing.
Yeah, I have two lists here.
Tier two.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, like you said, it's a very unhealthy situation for Zuko here, because this is the second, like, we saw this in the first episode and before. Azula does this thing where she, like, infantilizes Zuko in a lot of ways. She calls him Zuzu, which is, like, this, like, childhood nickname, and here she calls him Dum Dum. It's like, I don't know if she's trying to, like, throw Zuko off, which I'm sure she is, but it's also as part of it, just, like, she was always able to control Zuko as a kid, as when they were children, and so she's trying to, like, assert that onto Zuko here, even when they're still adults, just to remind him, like, who is in charge.
Oh, yeah.
It's always fun to just, like, wonder what Azula's motives are at any given moment. And I'm sure it's all of them, because she's a genius.
Yeah, she eventually does come out and straight up say what her motives are by the end of her plotting.
I believe so, yeah.
She is Megan from Drake and Josh energy, but, like, I never thought of Megan as so scary. But it seems like they're very similar. Miranda Cosgrove's portrayal of Megan was just so much more layered. So, like, I just really saw where she was coming from. They were boobs.
They were. True. So, any other thoughts before? I feel like there's actually a good amount of stuff to talk about in terms of, like, hints at things that may be going on in the future, but I don't want to cut anyone off if anyone has any non-spoilery thoughts to conclude.
We pretty much covered everything.
Pretty much it. I think the only thing I have to add is the song they played during that dance is fantastic.
That's true. Ryan's got a great taste in music.
He does. What's the name of that band? Was it
the Flamios?
Yeah. Flamios.
Very generic name.
Hey, that was another thing Toph did. She made the stands for the band.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
Yeah, no one questioned these earth pillars. It's fine.
Or the sculpture fountain that Katara made.
Well, but after that scene, the three of them were just, like, pretending to bend. And they're like, all right, guys, stop bending. And then you look at them, they're not actually doing anything. They're just, like, moving their arms around. Like, they forgot to animate the bending part of it.
I was thinking about that, and, like, they were like, okay, we're going to stop bending now. And then Aang does some very serious acrobatics during his dancing, and I'm just sort of like, can you really jump 6 feet in the air without airbending? I know he's going to try, but come on.
I trust Aang implicitly. I assume he has that sort of ability.
I was very impressed by him not bending at all during his fight in the schoolyard. That was great control by him, and he still was. It was like when he was forcing Zhao to, like, destroy his own ships, and he was just, like, jumping around and moving instead of hitting back.
Mm-hmm. Anyone that could win a fight without throwing any punches is a hero in my eyes.
Yes, good for Aang.
Very neutral.
Real quickly, before we move on, I don't like Aang with hair. I almost forgot to mention that.
Oh, I do like Aang with hair. I'm sorry to disagree with you.
That's okay. It's fine.
Apparently less iconic.
Well, yeah, yeah. If anyone was going to do a noodle portrait of Aang, they would not be doing one with hair, probably. They would do the more iconic image of him bald. But I didn't think it was a bad look. I think, you know, hair, headband, he was looking good today.
The hair and headband's better. I think that's a good look. Yeah. But the haircut needs work.
I don't dislike it. I agree it's not as iconic. I do like it as a parallel to Zuko's hair growth from last season.
Yeah, thank God Zuko figured out his hair situation.
I like overall that in this show that these characters experiment with different looks. You know, and especially in cartoons. You know, you got a thing where they're gonna have one look for the entire run of the show. You know, Timmy Turner never changes his shirt in Fairly Odd Parents, but
it's pretty cool.
You know, they're looking different. You can tell what season you're in or what stretch of episodes you're in based on how they look.
Yeah. It's kind of like Shaggy having a red shirt in that one Scooby-Doo movie with the werewolf.
Rugrats where Tommy Pickles had a red shirt.
I just discussed this on the Survivor subreddit, but I can always tell whether I'm looking at a picture of Cagayan or Cambodia because Spencer's hair in Cagayan is terrible.
Oh, okay.
Keep an eye out for that.
And I will.
Oh man, does it hit, is Spencer Bledsoe's hair journey similar to Zuko's, would you say?
It is, because it starts terrible and in the second iteration it becomes good.
Okay. Is it all shade besides the ponytail?
Yes, that's exactly what's going on. Yes.
It's just like he looked like a porcupine, but he figured it out. What is her name? I forget what his girlfriend at the time's name was, but she got him on the right track hair-wise. Anyway, I don't have any more thoughts on this episode after discussing Spencer Bledsoe's haircut in Survivor Cambodia.
Okay, Brendan, do you want to tell the people who will be dipping out, who don't want to be spoiled, where they can find you?
They can find me at the Happy Boys Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
What is that?
Check me out there.
Yeah. Do you want to give a pitch for a tour? No, you don't. Okay.
It's a podcast about beer. Most of the time, shitty beer. Sometimes we do decent beer. Mostly just things you can find at your local bevy, things that you associate with younger years of drinking, have on friends as guests, and just share party stories from our youth, and sometimes do deep dives into beer and craft beer, and mostly just kind of BS. It's a fun time. Check us out.
I assume BS stands for beer slurping.
It's exactly. Thank you for understanding.
Yes. Maddie G, tell the people where they can get their Maddie G fix.
You can follow me on Twitter at MaddieFresh24. And usually when I'm on a podcast, I either usually plug this podcast or the Hoppy Boys podcast. And now both of those are taken care of. I don't know what to do with myself. Yeah,
frequent guest, Matthew Gagan.
Yes. You're like Aang. You're feeling very wayward. You feel like you've lost your purpose in this world.
You're like Aang. You're a master of multiple elements, including Avatar and beer.
I've seen you shoot fire out of your hands.
Yes.
Nothing to plug except my Twitter.
Oh.
That's more than enough to me. You can find me at Rain Dierks on Twitter, and you can find us collectively at Bitter Jurors Pod on both Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram, Twitter, and Substack, and you can follow my other podcast, At Word of the Straits, STR8S, on Instagram and Twitter. We've been taking a hiatus for January, but we'll be back in February.
Hell yeah. Well, spoiler time. Let's get into it. I feel like something that really stands out to me, obviously, is that we're getting big hints to the eventual turn of May against Azula here, where she gives that little, like, sideways glare to Azula as she's leaving. It's like, I like that there's like really planting those seeds of distrust. Like Azula, who's like always so 100% in control of everyone's actions, apparently, is like, there's still this, at least one person as far as we know, who's just not willing to be under her thumb as much as she thinks she is. Which is good.
Very good.
Yes. we kind of like hinted at it, but actually this isn't really the last 80s pastiche we will be receiving this season. We do get Breakfast Club episode for the beach, but it's not for the gang, it's for the Fire Nation kids.
I was very excited when you mentioned Breakfast Club, because that is definitely one of my favorites.
I never made that connection.
Beach and Breakfast
Club
episode.
Yeah, I mean, when they have the whole...
Yeah, as soon as I watch it, the thing I said is I think my new favorite episode is the Breakfast Club on the Beach episode.
It's also kind of Top Gun. There's volleyball. You also get like a prison break. That feels very 80s, later on.
To be fair, I think anything, anytime a bunch of teenage-aged characters are sitting in a circle and talking about their feelings or their past, I think that is Breakfast Club.
And you do get a blow up by Zuko that is akin to the "No, Dad, what about you?"
Exactly. So
you get one of those.
Okay, I'm understanding now. I was not there, and I was not trying to make a joke earlier. But okay, I stand corrected.
Yeah, when you mentioned it, I was like, "Yeah, only they had a Breakfast Club." There's a banner here at the Zuko household.
I think that Korra should have done a Back to the Future episode where Tenzin got sent back and Katara's falling in love with him.
Would Doc be like Boomy or something?
That sounds perfect.
Okay, just based on hair alone.
This series does need more time travel in general.
Absolutely.
At least in an episode, just to experiment with.
Cryogenic freezing is not time travel enough for this viewer.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this idea of like Aang like leading with empathy here in this episode, and like I instantly thought of Korra. Like, what would Korra do in this situation? Would she try to teach people dancing, or would it be just like I don't know what Korra does here.
Right.
I just don't think that she's like doing weeks of subterfuge. Like, that's just not something she would do.
Yeah, I don't think she's enrolling in the school.
She's banging down doors. Like, where is Ozai? Like,
the thing about Korra is that she would have heard the general's plan in the episode one of book two and been like, yeah, let's figure out how I can learn how to master the Avatar State quickly and just go and defeat him.
Yeah, she does master that pretty quickly. Even though she's not super spiritual for whatever reason. I guess maybe because she's older, she masters that super quickly, but it's like it takes Aang a little longer to master that, I guess, based on the youth, possibly.
Well, this is something we're tracking. Women avatars in general tend to be very, like, better, period.
Very better.
Overall better.
It seems like the male avatars mess stuff up, and then the female avatars or the preceding male avatar has to fix it.
And really? That's the cycle. That's the cycle of Avatar.
So you guys have gone deep into the lore and comics and stuff like that?
I just based on obviously Roku is a big example of just like shitting the bed in terms of Avatar duties, and then Aang has to pick it up. But then of course Aang also leaves a lot of shit for Korra to have to fix, and things seem pretty great for Korra by the end of things.
I only read the first Kyoshi book so far, but a lot of that story is about all the shit Kurik messed up. So, like, it seems like there are just ongoing problems in the world, but I've only really ever seen them come from male avatars, because in the Kyoshi book, like, Avatar Yang Chen is revered as like this incredible, amazing person, just like I do, and she was a diplomat and this incredible woman who like saved the world over and over again, and then Kurik messed everything up.
Because it could have just been like not that much going on compared to other avatars, you know, like the first 2-3 years of Korra's life, she's got a shit ton going on. Because that may not be the case of other avatars. I wouldn't know. I haven't read any.
Yeah, sadly, like we always say, we would love more, just more Avatar lore. Like, would love to know.
I would go deep on that.
There's so little, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It's fine. We don't have to pitch more Avatar shows on our pod once again, but it's okay.
I'm just excited to announce that I will be starting season 3 of Legend of Korra this weekend.
Very nice.
I've gotten through I've been told are the lesser seasons. And we'll be starting the golden.
Who would tell you that?
What kind of animal? I think you're entering like Korra character growth here. Finally, like she's pretty unlikable personally for the first two seasons.
I wouldn't
and
say
even halfway through third, but
I wouldn't say I'm likable. I'm looking for reasons to stan her, and I just haven't really gotten.
Well, yeah, I mean, for a main character, for the title character, you want a lot of reasons to like her. She should be your favorite character, theoretically. But she's far from it.
How often is the protagonist someone's favorite character?
Yeah, I guess.
It's almost never for me.
I mean, it can't all be Corey Matthews in Boy Meets World.
I am excited for you to watch the second best season of the entire franchise, Medi. Look forward to that. Was there anything else in this episode that, like, was hinting at future developments? I'm trying to think.
More than Zuko.
I just feel like they could have done more with the Iroh scene. Like, it just felt like there would or should have been some kind of exchange there. To have him not say anything is like strange.
It struck me as a little strange.
Yeah, I do appreciate it though, in the sense that it's like the polar opposite of what we're used to Iroh. It's like, because what can Iroh say at this point that he hasn't already said to Zuko?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like a choice, like an active choice that he made.
I agree. Like,
talk to a shady character in a couple of scenes. He could have said that.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, The idea of Iroh not speaking to Zuko again until that final scene in the tent. I mean, like, that scene already is going to hit hard anyway, but the fact, but knowing that that's what's going to happen, I'm already, like, getting choked up thinking about that. So I think it works perfectly.
Is it fair to say that this is the episode, like, this is the turning point of Zuko? This is his peak where he's about to turn the other way real fast, or I don't remember the exact timeline.
I don't think that he's, like, I mean, he's never been, like, sure of his choice to betray his uncle and, like, the Avatar. Like, I feel like even, because, like, at the end of book two, we're already getting scenes of, like, him regretting and, like, not being sure. Or maybe that's the start of book three, I forget. But anyway, like, he's never been 100% back on board with the Fire Nation, even though he's, like, trying to convince himself to be. But, like, he's not fully going to be ready to jump ship until the invasion in, like, eight episodes or whatever. So there's probably going to be more
of that. We have about 10 episodes of Zuko.
Yeah.
Season three.
Yeah, it's great that they really give, like, his story enough time to actually, like, fully develop.
Yeah.
To just make it infinitely more satisfying. I'm just excited to keep watching Zuko grow.
I'm always Sparky Sparky Boom guy.
Yeah, we didn't even talk. Yeah, Sparky Sparky Boom man. We touched on that. But obviously, he's going to become big, and then I guess we don't want to spoiler too much for Korra. But
what are the coolest forms of bending in the show?
I'll still end up enjoying it, but
right. But that's such a cool idea. The idea of, like, combustion bending. Oh, yeah. It's very exciting. Plus, he's
but I do feel like that's another thing, like, we were talking about just with past avatars and just world bending and world building in general. Like, I just, like, it's, they introduce these two characters who do this thing with this tattoo on their forehead, and then we just know that they exist, but we're like,
right,
but where did you learn this? What is your backstory? Why don't you speak?
I wonder if there's going to be an avatar with combustion powers in the future.
That would be dope.
Yeah. But I really feel like it's like a trait you just must be born with. Otherwise, that'd be insane if you could draw a tattoo in your forehead and just, like, focus hard enough to explode.
Well, that's what avatars, that's what airbenders do.
I guess so.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll go deep, deep, deep into combustion bending lore, I'm sure, at some point in the future. It's just going to be a whole series about that.
Yeah, that'll be an off-season pod.
Yeah, it's that plus combustion bending. Yeah, that plus TikTok avatar. That's going to be the whole thing. It's great. Well, any other, I guess, concluding thoughts on this episode, or even just things you're looking forward to in the future?
Yes. I will once again praise this episode for making me laugh in every other scene. It was a nice, you know, as far as the main storyline goes, a nice break from all the super serious stuff.
That's right, from the drama. You know, there was some drama.
Yeah, back to school episode, a nice Footloose episode. As far as things we're looking forward to, you know, you mentioned the beach coming up very soon, one of my favorite episodes. And then just, you know, everything, like I said a couple times now, season three is my favorite. I feel like it got, like, exponentially better each season for me, whereas the first one I was like, yeah, okay, I get why people like this, it's fine, but whatever. Second season I was like, okay, now I really get it. By the third season, I was so invested in these characters, and, like, really just every time I would end an episode, I try to pace myself so I don't blow through the whole thing, but I'd end episodes and be like, ah, you know, I really want to watch the next one. I really want to see what happens. I love these characters so much at this point. I'm so invested in the storytelling and where it's going, and I just want to see how it wraps up. And then the finale is just, you know, one of the greatest pieces of media of all time.
That's a good point too. I mean, first off, there's definitely no duds in season three, in my opinion.
Not a single bad episode.
It's really hard for a beloved series to land a finale. And this show, in my opinion, definitely does that difficult task of making a good, satisfying, like, 100% approval rate finale.
As finales go, one of the best.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you can always think about shows and think, oh, this thing that, like, this question didn't get answered by the end of it. There's always, like, some sticking point for fans.
Right.
And I mean, you kind of get that with the, like, sort of Deus Ex Machina, like, esque like energy bending, but I think even that people are kind of forgiving of.
Yeah, for sure.
But in terms of like the emotion of it is 100% perfect, like in every way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited to get to the end of this too.
The only thing you don't get at the finale is answers to Zuko's mom stuff, which you can get in comics from what I understand.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a comic book.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Which we have not read and cannot answer questions about it.
So, from what I know, I'm like, those are cute, but I didn't need those answers. Thank you for them.
Yeah, right.
I'll place them over here on this little, I don't know, nightstand and probably never look at them again, but thank you for that. So, wow, exciting stuff. Yeah, love these characters, like Matt said. Do you guys want to replug one last time before we head off into the Wild Blue Yonder? Or Red for Yonder, sure. Now that we're switching up the color palette of the show.
Oh, sure. Well, you can find me at The Happy Boys Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Listen to our show, The Happy Boys, the show about shitty beer. Frequent guest Matt Gagan is with us, and that's the only good thing in his life going right now.
That is true.
Ooh. Oh, we're opening the library at this 11th hour of the show. We're just breathing the shit out of each other. Okay.
Yeah, we're expecting it, but it is
Matt, thoughts?
No thoughts. But I to plug my Twitter again. You can follow me on Twitter at MattyFresh24. And since I don't have a podcast of my own to plug, I will just use this opportunity to tell people that the reboot of Saved by the Bell is very good and you should watch.
Josie is completely correct.
Is it actually good?
It's oh so God, good.
Really?
It's so good.
There's nothing that could justify paying for Peacock Premium, and I'm not paying for it still, but I think this could be it, because Josie Toda is a star. The cast is very fun. It's
I don't know if you've ever watched Great News, but that was an incredible show created by the same woman, Tracy Wigfield, who is like a Tina Fey apprentice who who worked on 30 Rock as well. Great News and Saved by the Bell are two incredible shows. 30 Rock is my favorite television show of all time. And so I completely agree, Matt, with your plug of Saved by the Bell. Very doubtful in like that it would get a second season. I just feel like it's been panned and who's watching Peacock Premium. But right. I do think it absolutely deserves one because it is so funny.
Oh, yeah.
I do have to say I love Kagan's idea of plugs is just like naming things he enjoys. I think it's really funny. Every time he's on our show, he does the same thing. Just like, I'm watching this, this, and this. Like, that's not really what plugs are. But I mean, if you want to plug other people's projects, then by all means.
I need people to watch my favorite shows.
Yeah, so they're great recommendations. I always appreciate them.
Yeah. You can't help but just be the most adorable person on the planet. It's just the way that Matt is.
Balances out what Brendan tried to do.
Really cruel joke about my wife.
Well, he alluded to it in the earlier plug, so I was just
that was his joke to make. Okay.
Okay, sure.
It's okay he says it.
Yeah, exactly.
right.
Well, find me at Rangerix on Twitter. Not familiar with Saved by the Bell the current years. Definitely watched original series plus college years when they had those cool like dog hangers on their doors.
Don't forget about Good Morning Miss Bliss, the prequel, pre-Saved by the Bell series.
Yep. So I guess I will just double down on that plug on this show I've never seen and probably will never watch. Go ahead, watch it. Probably a masterpiece. You can find us at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram as well.
I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram, Twitter, and Substack. I've never watched the old Saved by the Bell or anything else in the universe, but I'm enjoying the current iteration. Anyway, I just realized in this exact second that I forgot to put out the inbox or our mailbox thing, and I'm sorry about that. So I'll try to remember to do that next time. But people haven't really been writing in for the last couple episodes, so I'm sorry I forgot. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can follow my other podcasts at Word on the Straits, STR8S, on Instagram and Twitter.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you, Brendan and Matt.
So welcome. Thank you for having me. It was such a blast. First time guesting on a show, and you guys are great showrunners.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're insulting of your friend and very complimentary of two strangers. Okay,
I know him well, so I'll be nice to you guys until I see you guys a few more times.
Yes, I'm excited. Thank you all for listening as well, and see you all next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.